Hey everybody, Fritz Bergen here, bloodandfaith.com. It is the 27th of June, 2020. I put up a new article here a couple days ago. It's part of a series I'm writing on violence, and I call it Christian violence. Is it Christian violence or is it violence? I don't know, but I call it Christian violence. And the article that I put up is it's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call to the people that live in rural areas who think the crazy Antifa stuff can't get to them. There's a great article in Breitbart here not too long ago, and the writer is good. It was a good article. I'm not criticizing it at all, but he was glad that there's two Americas. There's rural America, where people seem to have a sense of sanity on their heads, and you've got urban America, where you're rioting and burning and tearing everything down. And he's just very glad that there's actually this other world out there that has a sense of sanity. And I am too. But I'm also not optimistic that somehow rural folk can resist the war that we're in. There a number of people have surmised that the civil war that's coming, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but they surmise that instead of being geographical over broad geographic regions, it's really urban versus rural. And there's a theory that if you're in the rural areas, you can vet the food, you control the power production, and you can get by. And so I'm gonna talk about that a little bit. First of all, it's not a civil war that's coming. It's a civil war that's already here, and it's a civil war that we've already lost. I think you and I need to rewrap our heads around this thing. We've already lost, and we don't even know it. We're hunkered down in our homes and our farms, our communities. We've got our extra food, an extra pack of 50 rounds of 22 caliber ammunition, and a jug of water, and we say we're ready when they come. And in reality, we've already lost. I mean, tell me one major institution that the left does not own. Give me one. They own the banks. They own the public education. They own the universities. They own the government, they own the military, they own the law enforcement, they own every major media outlet. They own the social services groups, they own the welfare system. I'm trying to figure out what a guy like me can say, we own this institution. Even the families, the assault on the families began at least a half a century ago. And they've done so well that even traditional white Christian families are highly compromised. So they've destroyed everything, and the centers of power they already own. So it's not a matter of when the war comes. The war already came and it went by us, and we haven't even noticed yet. We haven't even woke up to the fact that they won. What's going on now is a cleanup operation. It's a mopping up. The left is mopping up. They're not fighting it. They want it. They're just mopping up. And they're going to formally take over the instruments of power. And anybody that gets in their way will be fed through a wood chipper, metaphorically speaking, of course. There's a story it's not a story. After the French Revolution, largely happened in Paris, 1789. They decided they didn't want a king anymore, so they revolted. And this was a revolt largely generated out of the intellectual world of the French Enlightenment thinkers, the atheists. So the atheists come along and said, we don't serve God, we don't serve king, we're going to have the Year of Man. And they established the Year of Man, year one of the Year of Man. And they desecrated the churches, overthrew the monarchy, and got out the guillotines, and they started executing anybody, all the bad thinkers, executing them. Now most of the French people weren't these crazy atheists. You go out into the French countryside, and they're all about God, King, and faith. And it wasn't enough that the communists took over Paris. So they went out into the rural areas, and they started slaughtering. It depends on who you're reading, but from tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of innocent Catholic French people. who simply were guilty of bad thinking. And they went out of their way to track down these people. And you would think of anybody that could be self-sufficient and anybody that could resist an invader, it would surely be the hardy folk from the countryside. And these revolutionaries, Frenchmen, other Frenchmen, went out into the countryside and put the pitchforks into the French Catholics. Mass murder, murder on a massive scale. It's called the Vendée. And this is not unusual in a Marxist revolution. You look at the Russian Revolution. It wasn't enough that they took over the cities. They actively went out into the countryside. You've heard of the kulaks. These were the Russian peasantry class, Christian peasants, Christian peoples. And they were killed by the tens of millions because they dared say, you know what, we want to believe in our God and we are going to keep farming the way we farmed for centuries. And they were slaughtered and they were killed and they were murdered. You look at the Chinese under Mao, they, you know, had a process where all the old people had to die. Anybody that used to think the way things used to be, they had to be eliminated. And so millions and millions of Chinese died in the Cultural Revolution, where you purge the bad thinkers, you purge the people that aren't thinking right. And it didn't really matter if millions more died because of starvation, because they wiped out the farmers. Nobody cared about that. The communists don't care about that. It's not how many people die. It's can you purify the thought line of the peoples? That's their highest, seems to be their highest moral goal. And, you know, you read about the, you know, Pol Pot, I'm sure you're familiar with the killing fields. 25% of the Cambodian people were killed, and that would include anybody with a high school education or that wore glasses, because if you wore glasses, obviously you wore glasses so that you could read, and if you could read, you'd been polluted by the ideas of non-communists, and so you had to get rid of them. This is how Marxist revolutions work. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Antifas and the BLMs and Chaz. I grew up in Seattle. I loved Seattle, past tense. It used to be an absolutely gorgeous, beautiful city. One of the most wonderful places on the planet. Really, really, really was nice. My grandmother was born there. And her parents emigrated from England into Canada and down into Seattle. So my history goes back there generations as pioneers in Seattle. And it's been taken over let's not go there. It's been taken over. And in fact, my own brother had to leave that city too. And he's he was a good Seattle person. And they had to leave because they weren't safe in their own town, even though we'd been there generations. And it was a sad thing. So, you know, the communists can't leave alone. As long as there's somebody out there that's a bad thinker, they gotta go after them. And the theory on the sort of the right resistance, the patriots, is that, you know, we're gonna take care of our towns, we're gonna take care of our people, and we're gonna resist them. And you know, I want to walk through this with you guys and let you know how this actually works. Yeah, it is possible that they go out there with their slingshots and their Molotov cocktails and they, you know, attack a well-organized resistance in, I don't know, North Idaho. And the Patriots rally around and they defend their town from the invading Marxists. And that's, you know, that's a wonderful thing. But it's a little bit of a fantasy and that's not really how it works. Here's how it works. Let's say you live in a neighborhood. In your neighborhood, you know, you get some Trump supporters in there. Well, next thing you know, you got a Molotov cocktail thrown at your house in the middle of the night, and your house is on fire. What are you going to do about that? I mean, let's say it was in the day. Let's say that Molotov cocktail was in the middle of the day. Let's say you were home. Let's say you were standing outside with a firearm. And you're watching two guys clad in black get out of their car staring you down. Let's say one of them pulls out a bottle. Do you shoot them then? What's a bottle that has a rag in it? Can you shoot them then? What if the bottle has some liquid in it and has a rag in it? Can you shoot them then? You don't know what's in the bottle. Maybe it's water. Maybe he's just baiting you. Maybe he's just teasing you. Maybe he's just doing mind games on you. What if he lights it and it's full of water? Can you shoot him then? You don't know what's in that bottle. Do you have to let him light it and throw it at your house and have it explode and your house start burning down before you can shoot him? Or is that not even permitted then because you were out of your house and obviously you were safe? At what point can you defend yourself? You know that when they drive away, nobody's going to find them. They pull up in a stolen car and they do their dirty tricks and you can't leave because you're tied to your home. And a little Johnny policeman comes around and says, oh, you're brandishing a firearm. We're going to arrest you and we're going to take away your gun and your guns. And, you know, here's a $10,000 bill to hire an attorney to get you out of this mess. And by the way, since you were doing the bad deed, we're going to take away your concealed weapons permit. The right has a problem. The right believes in obeying the law. And so we cooperate and we obey and we do everything right. And the left has no moral qualms about that. They despise the law. And they have their own twisted moral justification for breaking every law, for disowning the Constitution of the United States, because written, according to them, by racists. And so it's their duty to overturn the Constitution and their duty to break every law that that's on the books. And the people on the right, guys like me, I'm a rule follower, man. Every rule out there, I got to follow. Because if I don't, if I don't, you know, you get into trouble. You get into trouble. You know, your employer doesn't like it if you know, you're a rule breaker. So we're hamstring right there. Now, the left, they can go out and they can murder. They can use essentially weapons of mass destruction. That's what a Molotov cocktail is. You take a Molotov cocktail, it's made out of a bottle full of gas, and you throw it and you light something and you. I mean, they're using them all over the United States. Anybody calling them out for that? Oh, they're just, it's mostly peaceful protesters. But you know what happens on the right? You know, some dude shows up with a weapon and you know, we got neo-Nazi extremist militias running around America that have to be crushed. So you got two rules. You got a rule for the lawbreaker and you got a rule for the anarchist. The governments, near as I can tell, you tell me if I'm wrong, state governments, city governments, national governments, they give a complete and utter pass to these folks. They got to give a complete pass to these folks. They, you know, a large brick is a deadly weapon. If you throw a brick at a man, you can kill him. And this is why police officers traditionally have been able to return fire with their weapons if somebody's throwing a rock at them. Same with Molotov cocktails. But these folks are being treated with kid gloves. The city police are saying, or have been told by the political leaders, stand down. Give them what they want. Let them take over Seattle. Let them burn your precinct to the ground. Imagine them doing that to white Christians with guns. Never. Never would happen. So this is what I mean when I say we've already lost. They've already got the institutions. They have the city governments. They have the state governments. And you know, I don't know what we're waiting for, but I think we need to change what we're thinking. It's already gone, and it's sad. I mean, what is there? What's left? All right, you still got your, you know, box of 22 ammo stuck somewhere in your drawer, and you got a case of spam down there because you're waiting for the bad stuff to start. And they're laughing at you because it's come and gone and we've already lost. And you say, well, I'm living in my rural area. You know, I've got my buddies. You know, we're going to form a militia. So your militia's already been compromised. The guy that formed your militia was probably a federal snitch in the first place. They just set that up to bring you out and figure out who you are. And it doesn't work this way. It doesn't work where they're going to come in and start finding people to kill. That's too much work. That's very unsophisticated. That's not how this is going to work. Let me tell you how this works. You guys have heard of Gab, gab.com. Here's a Christian guy. He saw the leftist nonsense going on in Silicon Valley, persecuted for his own politics. So he left, he formed his own company. So first thing that happens is you get your company gets thrown off from the web hosting company, says we're not going to host your site anymore, gab.com. This is a plug for gab.com, by the way. forget Twitter, gab.com. And so he loses his website. He's got to scramble around to find a different web hosting company. And then just recently, Visa, the big Visa, not his local bank, but the big Visa company, revoke your ability to take Visa cards for your business. And not only for your business, but also for his entire family. So they're shutting down, they shut down his ability to take money to support himself and his family. And there's been plenty of websites that have done it. YouTube, which is owned by Google, kicked off Alex Jones years ago. Said, you can't, your speech is banned. We don't believe that you have the right to have freedom of speech, so we're going to ban you. And hundreds of other websites have had the same experience on YouTube and with their web hosting companies. They just start getting rid of you. So the way they're going to come to you, if you're country folk, it's not complicated. Daisy's Diner. Daisy's Diner, all of a sudden they can't, there's a problem with her credit card processing. She can't take credit cards anymore because she fits a profile. What's her profile? Well, she's white. She gives money to her local church. She lives in a zip code that voted 90% for Trump. And she's probably married. She's probably married to the father of all of her children, who's also white. It's also Christian. So she fits the profile. So all of a sudden, she can't run her business anymore because the credit card company decided that she doesn't, she's a racist. Because after all, she's white. Therefore, she's a racist. Her brother, he's a small-town logger. He's a small-time logger. So he's got a couple of big diesel trucks. Pulls up, he's going to get some diesel fuel for his truck, and all of a sudden his credit card doesn't work. Why does the credit card not work? Well, he fits a profile. He bought some ammo online here a couple months back. He's also married to the same person that raises his kids, and he, pays a mortgage on his house, and he is a member of NRA, and he's white. And he gave to a church, and therefore he's a part of the structural racism problem. And so now he can't buy gas for his diesel truck because you've got the thought police, just like Facebook does, guys. It's just really, really, really simple. Facebook does this, the same thing. They go get these activists out there. You know, they fill it with people that aren't straight white Christian men, basically. They fill these groups with the people that are as far from being straight white Christian men as they can find, and they say, go out and find hate speech. So they cull through everything on Facebook, and they start saying, well, this is hate speech, and that's hate speech. Anybody that's a Trump supporter is hate speech. And all Visa has to do is the same thing. All they have to do is turn over their database to a group like this who's going to cull through the credit card billing, and they're going to use artificial intelligence, and they're just going to run an algorithm, and they're going to say, give me anybody that lives in a zip code that is, mostly Trump supporters. Give me people that are white. Anybody that's bought a Confederate flag, drives a diesel truck, everybody that owns, that's purchased a firearm or purchased ammo, anybody that's got a hunting license, and that's a great place to start. And anybody that, maybe they do a filter on it and say, well, if you gave to Black Lives Matter, we can take you off that list. And they're going to run this filter, and they'll do it really, really selectively at first. And they're going to say, oh, here's our bad thinkers. Here's a group of bad thinkers in some insignificant rural county in either Montana or West Virginia or Texas. It doesn't matter where. And all of a sudden, their credit cards don't work anymore. Maybe they cap out the limit on what they can spend on a credit card. Maybe their interest rate goes from 10% to 22%. Maybe their credit is reduced from $15,000 to $2,000. And then they start putting the squeeze on you. Imagine if you're a small farmer and you have a line of credit and they say, no seed for you. No seed for you. No, we've gone through all your records and we don't see anywhere where you've donated to Antifa or Black Lives Matter or the Gay and Lesbian Association. Shakedown begins, baby. Oh, you want to buy seed from us? Well, all you got to do is donate to some of these charities. And we'll see what we can do for you. So the shakedown begins. You want to buy a house? You want to buy a house. Wait a minute. You're a straight, white, Christian male that hunts and drives a truck. No house for you. We're not going to give you a loan. No, there's structural racism in our loan program. And so it's going to take us a while to look at your loan. So we're not so sure we can give you a loan for your house. You're a small-time landlord. You've got a couple of rental units, three or four or five, or let's say you got 20. Uh-huh. Well, Mr. Landlord, what have you done for the people that aren't straight white Christian males lately? How many people do you have that are in their minorities? Oh, I got a bunch of minorities. Uh-huh. And do you give them subsidized rent? What do you mean, do I give them subsidized rent? Well, you know, are you giving them free rent because they're part of the oppressed class and you're part of the oppressor class? And you're going, well, I can't. If I do that, I won't be able to afford my mortgage. Oh, well, about your mortgage. Yeah, we're calling your loan on your house now, on your rental properties. And yeah, that adjustable rate thing, well, it just went from 3% to 25%. How do you like that? And this is how they get you. This is how they get you. You don't need to invade physically all this stuff. Like I said at the beginning, all the major institutions are already owned by the left. Are you kidding me? I mean, what websites do you read? Do you go to Breitbart? Do you go to Gab.com? Do you go to, I don't know, you name it. You name your news sites. You don't think Apple and Google has got a profile on you already? Oh, you're a bad thinker. You're a bad thinker. And they can pinch you off one at a time. Let's say you're a mom, stay-at-home mom, and you got a, you know, online business. Oh, yeah, eBay not too impressed with your online business. We're gonna shut you down. Visa's not gonna take process your things anymore. PayPal's not gonna process your things anymore. It's really easy. We've built a totalitarian society on the technical level. We've already built a totalitarian society on the technical level. Now it's a matter of pushing buttons and checking boxes to get everybody. Maybe your cell phone stops working. So we've already lost. The war's already lost, guys. And if you're going to think seriously about this, you have to think what's going to change. What has to change? How do we get out of this mess? You know, this is a whole system. This is not a matter of if we tweak this or tweak that, we can get it back. If we just elect a good sheriff and a couple of folks at the state house. This is a whole civilization. And this is why I write about this at bloodandfaith.com. And I say very clearly, my goal is to build Christian nation states. You can't do this halfway. We've proven that. We've proven that in the history of the United States. The United States was our original colonists were Christian Englishmen that settled over here, and they built something absolutely spectacular and wonderful, and then it became corrupted, and it became corrupted from within. And now we do our best to, you know, hold on to a little piece of Americana or something here, something there, and you know, and every last little shred is being taken from us now. Every last little shred is being taken from us. You can't fly the Dixie flag at a NASCAR race anymore. I mean, I'm not even from the South, but come on, folks, that's ridiculous. You know, you can have Black Lives Matter, but God help you, you nasty racist, if you say the White Lives Matter. And there's nothing left. There's nothing left. They've won. And we're going to have to think deeply about this. And I've thought deeply about it. And this is why I say we need Christian nation states. We need our own nation. And this goes in a little deeper than I wanted to this time. But you've got to figure out who your people are. Who are you? Google manipulates search results to produce the political ends that it wants. They're very open about this. They've been stating it publicly because they're against hate, so they have to do it. University professors lose their jobs, guys. Statutes are targeted if they're of white men. Nobody's going to touch a black man's statue. Christian websites deplatformed. It's all in all in all. Now, how is it that we have a government that protects those that would kill us? When does that government become illegitimate? Is a government legitimate when it is used to attack us? That's the question that we need to start asking. It's a dangerous question. The left has already determined that the government is illegitimate. The left has already determined that the Constitution is illegitimate, that any laws that in any way limit their activity are illegitimate. We've seen that carried out in practice as they burn down buildings, as they kill people, as they spray paint, kill all the whites on anything that they can find. They don't have any respect for the law, but those of us on the right cling desperately to a belief that the Constitution is going to protect us. And I'm not aware of a government, whether it's a city, a state, or a national government in the United States, that actually feels that way. I mean, I know folks in government business. They like their GS salaries, man. GS-14 and climbing. They ain't going to give that up on some sort of constitutional principle. I have yet to see it. I know a lot of good, God-fearing, Christian conservatives, and they're in the government. But I don't know one of them that's willing to lay that down in order to protect your constitutional rights. I just don't. So if you're looking for help from the government, I think it's too late. So when the government actively conspires to destroy you and yours, is it still legitimate? When they actively participate in the undermining of the Bill of Rights, is it still legitimate? At what point does that government become illegitimate? These are the questions that we have not yet started asking ourselves. Few have, but not very many. And once that goes, you know, what is the next form of government? Well, the natural form of government is always the man alone. That is the ultimate legitimate form of government, the man alone. Next, it's the man and his family. The family is that legitimate form of government. These are forms of government vastly more ancient than the constitutional republic that America once was. And then it's the man and his kith and kin. It's his cousins and his second cousins, his uncles and his aunts, his nephews and his nieces. That's the next level of government that is far more legitimate. It's far more ancient and resilient than words on parchment. And so you find your tribe. And then there's tribes of tribes, which is what a nation is. It's a nation, it's a bloodline of related peoples with a common language, a common worldview. And that is the most natural form of organization there is. It is unnatural. It's unnatural to mix foreign peoples and expect them to get along. And we've experimented with that in the last 100 years in the West. And it doesn't work. Europe has fallen apart. America is aflame. And we wonder, gee, how come we can't get along? But it forces one to think through how deep this goes, how deep the rot goes. And my thesis is that the rot goes as deep as it can possibly go. You had a Christian people that came and settled in North America. And this Christian people abandoned the God of their ancestors. if you're white, look back over through your generations. How many generations do you have to go back where you're, you know, your grandparents or your great-grandparents or their parents were God-fearing Christian peoples? They feared God. They went to church. Some of them were pastors, preachers. And you go down two or three generations, and it's Ichabod. The Spirit of the Lord has departed. This Christian people, this Christian European people has abandoned their God. And they didn't do it by themselves. Their ancestors were seduced by the idea that we can somehow mix our beliefs with the beliefs of the Antichrist. Of course, they didn't call him the Antichrist. You know, back then it's, well, you just need to be a little more tolerant of people's differences. You need to be a little, get a little more diversity in there. And so when I, you know, when I was a kid, I very distinctly remember the Ten Commandments being on the wall of the schoolhouse. This was early in the 1960s. And I suspect it was after the Supreme Court decision that made it illegal. But the teachers there were Christian. Not because they were Christian, but because they were a Christian people from generations. And the principals, and like, they're not gonna, nobody's running to tear that off the walls. Nobody did there. And so that stayed there for years after the Supreme Court made whatever decision they made. But eventually you get new teachers in that have been indoctrinated through the religious system, which is the universities. And they've been taught how to think. And they say, oh, well, we can't have that. God forbid we have the Ten Commandments on the wall of the schoolhouse. And so down it comes. And, you know, next thing you know, God didn't create anything or anybody. That's a figment of people's imaginations. We evolved out of slime mold. And we're all just accidents. And that gets taught for a few generations. You know, we're taught that the family is a symbol of oppression. And it's meant to keep women in bondage. And so the family becomes under attack. And you destroy the father figure. You destroy it and you undermine it. And then you invent new moralities. You invent a new moral terms. Instead of thou shalt not commit adultery or thou shalt honor your father and mother, you invent new moralities, like you can't be racist and you can't be sexist, you can't be Islamophobic, you can't be homophobic, you can't be queerphobic. These values, in many cases, absolutely are diametrically opposed to the scriptures that your great-grandparents revered them. And now we're taught exactly the opposite. And so for the descendants of a Christian European people, you didn't get this way because you woke up one day and decided that you weren't going to be a Christian people anymore. It took generations of poisoning for this to filter down into you now and your children. And so even those of us that are Christian and we cling to our Bibles, that's a mockery to the guy that used to be in the White House. You know, your kids grow up and they go do some crazy thing and you go, my God, what happened? I didn't raise you that way. Well, you know what? There's no Christianity without Christian nations. This is what I've been saying. You can't just say, well, this little Christian, it's like sprinkling on your ice cream. You put a couple little sugar sprinkles on your ice cream, and you think, well, now it's Christian ice cream because it's got sprinkles on it. No, it's really not. And I probably mentioned this before, but the pilgrims in England, you know, they couldn't practice their religion in England because of what was going on in there, so they all left. They went to Amsterdam because there was freedom of religion in Amsterdam, and they're raising their family. And next thing you know, their kids are these wild kids that are just doing whatever your other Amsterdam teenager is doing. And they're like, oh my God. You know, we've gone from one bad situation to another bad situation. And so they signed on as to be basically indentured servants on these private boats that went across the Atlantic to set up colonies in the New World. They said, we're going to go where nobody else is, and we're going to form our own nation state of Christian peoples with a Christian culture and Christian values and Christian laws so that we can raise generations of Christians. And that's what they did, and that's how we got the colonists in New England. And that's really what we have to do again. We're going to have to figure this out, folks, because this is not a matter of you having enough ammo for your 22. They've already won. And you can't, you know, they own your kids, man. They own your kids. Your kids still go to the public school in your nice little rural area, and they're still taught that Tommy has two daddies. And what do you think they're going to teach your kids? They're going to teach them how evil the white Christian people are. And so, you know, we've already lost. And so now it's, we got to figure out how to get back. So that was that article on Christian violence, bloodandfaith.com. I do end on a positive note. And the positive note is this. God still knows who you are. He still knows that you're the children and great-grandchildren of a Christian people. And he wants you back. And hopefully what we're going through right now in the United States is a great wake-up call. It's a great wake-up call to the historically Christian peoples that live in North America, that we would return to the God of our ancestors and, you know, repent. And I don't mean repent because, you know, you got together and had a beer with your buddies last night. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about we have to say we're going to have a Christian nation state, and we're going to have to fight for it. We're going to have to realize how serious this is, because this isn't about you and the next 10 years of your life. This is about the destiny of your bloodline for generations. Who is fighting for your bloodlines 4 generations from now? Who is doing that? There's only one person can do that, and that's you. The only person that can fight for your descendants is you. The enemy is not going to fight for your descendants. The enemy wants to destroy your descendants. And in order for you to fight for your descendants, you have to realize the serious game that we're in. That this isn't just about you and you getting yours and keeping the little that you have and thinking you're lucky. This is serious. This is about where you stand on your judgment day, when you face your Maker. He doesn't care about that beer that you drank with your buddies. That's not it. What did you do for your descendants? What did you do to create a world for your great-great-great-great-grandchildren? Or did you just fold because it was tough? That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. And this takes some very, very deep digging into our souls, where a man needs to wake up and say, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? And what does any of this mean? And my prayer, now it's more than a prayer. My purpose is that my brethren would wake up to this, and they would look back, and they would see and understand clearly how their ancestors viewed themselves and their ancestors and their descendants. There's a continuous line between you and your ancestors and you and your descendants. It is the enemy. It's the devil. It's the world. It's the Antichrist who've cut that line and tried to destroy that line and try to tell you that you are not the son of your father, that you're your own independent, self-existing, autonomous unit. And that is simply not true. We come from a long line of ancestors that trace their way back to Japheth and to Noah and to Adam. You're here because of them, and your descendants will be here because of you. We need to understand who we are as a family, as a generation, as a nation, and as a bloodline. And understand that at the judgment day, these questions are the really the only relevant question. And my purpose is that this understanding of who we are would awaken once again, especially with my European Christian brothers. And I realize you may not be a Christian today, but your ancestors were. And they have no greater legacy to pass down to you than that faith in the King, in Jesus Christ. That was their greatest legacy. And it's not just them that failed, but there's a whole lot of Antichrist people and institutions and spirits out there that struggled for hundreds of years to strip that from you. It's a darkness from the enemy that he's robbed generations and generations and generations of white people of the Christian faith. And it's my belief, I don't, your AR-15 is not going to save you. It's not going to save you. It's not going to save your kid. It's not going to save your grandkids. This is foundational. If you don't believe, it's already lost. If you don't believe, there you have nothing to fight for. You have to reach deep. And you need to understand who you are and who your ancestors were. Jesus Christ very, very specifically called out the Europeans as a specific people to serve him. Why, you say? What language were the scriptures written in after Jesus Christ rose from the dead? They were written in a European tongue. Jesus told the Jews, I will take the vineyard from you and give it to a different ethnic group. Jesus told the Jews, he says, my father invited everybody to the wedding feast. He invited you to a wedding feast. Because you would not obey, he'll go out and find other people. And you, he will destroy. Paul, we know Paul was called to the Europeans, to convert the Europeans to Jesus Christ. And it's the only civilization on the planet that embraced Jesus Christ as a civilization, and it changed the world. And this is why the non-Europeans, many of them, hate the European, because they hate the Christian and the European. And I know you've never heard that. I got it. I didn't either. Didn't understand this till quite recently. But just ask yourself, what language was the scriptures written in since Jesus Christ rose from the dead? It's in Greek. It's a European tongue. What civilization became Christian? It's the Europeans. And then the Europeans went and they, you know, to the extent that there is Christianity around the world, it was European missionaries who took it. So the devil's goal is to wipe that legacy out. That's the devil's goal. So don't think of yourself about you and the next 10 or 20 years of your life. This is about who you came from and your ancestors. And it's about your descendants down 20 generations. Until you white people understand this. I don't think there's a prayer. I've gone through this. Go to bloodandfaith.com. Read my article on the tax on the rural areas. It's cleanup is simple. Cleanup is real simple, folks. They've already won. Now it's just mop-up time. To win, we're going to have to go back and figure out who we are and why life matters. And when you understand that, when we understand that, no, man, ain't nothing going to stop us. When the spies went into the promised land and they saw the giants, they saw the Amalekites, they saw the sons of Anak, giants. And in their mind, they said, there's no way we can beat them. It's kind of what I said in my paper. But Caleb said, listen, we got a secret weapon, folks. It's called God Almighty. And that's our secret weapon. When we return to the faith of our ancestors, the faith in Jesus Christ. It's not that God can't do it. He's waiting on us. We got to wake up. We got to wake up. I've said for many years, I talk to different people and they say, it's so bad, we just need revival. These Christians, I don't know what's up with these Christians, man. On one hand, they say, well, we just need a revival. On the other hand, they're like, oh, they almost clap their hands in glee, glad that things are getting so horrible because they think God's going to come back and rescue them and get us out of here. And I just have a real different opinion on that. A man is called to live and die for the succeeding generations, 10 generations down the line, not just about this life. And hoping that it all comes to an end is not a Christian worldview. And also this idea that somehow, a little touch of the Holy Ghost and people cry and they start going to church for, 6 months, it's going to change the world is nonsense. There has to be a rebuilding of philosophy, a rebuilding of theology, a rebuilding of the intellectual world that we lost because we've surrendered it to the atheists and to the Marxists and the communists, which is all the same stuff. It's all the same stuff. It's all Antichrist. Rejects the ideas of the Hebrew and the Greek scriptures. And we've set up the traditions of men and the traditions of the elders in the place of what God wrote, what God gave us in the Bible. We've put that there in its place. And so for many Christians, unfortunately, to be a good Christian, you have to be against racism, sexism, Islamophobia, transphobia, queerphobia, homophobia, and intolerance. And that's become their new moral guide. And that ain't in the Bible, folks. Not there. We've substituted man's morality for God's morality. And that has to be dealt with at its root. And let me tell you something. The enemy won't go for that. The enemy's not looking to compromise. They've already won. They've already won. What are they going to give back to you when they own the whole thing? They're in a mopping up operation. This isn't about us clawing it back. They've won. And for us to do something different, this, we have to understand who we are and where we came from. And we have to make a decision on who we want to be again. And your ancestors were Christians. They came out of a Christian civilization. And you're going to have to return to that. Otherwise, there is no hope. But with the return to that, these giants are nothing. They're nothing. And that's what I'm all about. Fritz Berggren, Blood and Faith, bloodandfaith.com, 27 June 2020.